This week's parasha is Parashas Truma. Parashas Truma begins on page 444. But before we start doing any of the pesukim, I'd like to begin with the Ramban's introduction to this week's parasha. Okay, so the Ramban begins, interestingly, setting things up about how, you know, how we've been leading now into this parsha, which this deals with the mitzvah of building the Mishkan, building the tabernacle. So the Raman writes, Kasha divar Hashem im Yisrael panim b'fanim aseres adibris. After Hashem spoke to the Jewish people, after he spoke directly to the Jewish people, giving them what we refer to as the Ten Commandments, v'tziva oisam al yedei Moshe k'tzas mitzvahs. And he also commanded them through Moshe some of the mitzvahs. Shehem kamay avais lemitzvaseh shel Torah. They act like fathers or like the starting points for the rest of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Kasher inhigu rabbi seinu imagerim shebayim lisyaid. As we find is done with converts who come to become Jewish. Okay, the Ramban starting off. What did we have in Parashas Yisrael? The giving of the Ten Commandments. Parashas Mishpatim was actually the first set of mitzvahs that Moshe was told to give to the Jewish people. And the Ramban is saying that this first set of mitzvahs is the equivalent of how when somebody comes to convert, we tell him some of the mitzvahs. When a convert first comes to convert, we don't sit down there and go through all 613 mitzvahs with him. We go through some of the mitzvahs, some of the main mitzvahs. And in a similar form, that is what Hashem was doing to Jewish people at the giving of the Torah. He has the Aseres HaDibros, and then you have some of the mitzvahs that the Jewish people are being introduced to as a would-be convert is introduced to the mitzvahs. Now, the Yisrael kiblu aleihem la'aseis komasha yitzavim ayodei shel Moshe. The Jewish people said, Nasa v'nishma. Right? The Jewish people accepted everything that Moshe brought to them. The karas imahem bris al kol zeh. And then Hashem made a covenant with the Jewish people over all of this. Me'atohi nehem lo'i la'am. From now on, after this process, they have become his unique nation. V'ulahem le'loi kim. And he has that special godly relationship with them. As Hashem told them at the start, as the Pasuk says, if you shall listen to my voice, and guard my covenant, you shall be for me as a treasure. You will be to me as a special treasure. And in another Pasuk it says, you shall be for me a kingdom of Kohanim and a holy nation. Vihine heim kadoshim. Now at this point, they are holy. They have gained that sanctity. Reuyim shiyeh behem mikdash lahashrish chinasei b'nehem. They are now worthy of having a sanctuary for the divine presence to rest in their midst. Okay? That's step number one. The Ramban is trying to say, how do we get to this point of the Mishkan? We got to this point of the Mishkan because the Jewish people made themselves worthy of a place for their Shechina to rest in their midst. And that worthiness comes with accepting the Torah. Okay? V'lochein tziva tchila al devar ha-mishkan she'eloi bayis b'seicham mekudosh l'shmoi v'sham yidaber im Moshe v'yitzaves b'nei Yisrael. And therefore, what is the discussion now begin with? It begins with creating the Mishkan, the tabernacle, a place for which to Hashem to have, so to speak, a dwelling amongst them, sanctified for his name. There he would speak with Moshe and charge the Jewish people. V'hine ikar ha-chepetz hu b'mishkan makay menuchas ha-shechina. What is the main part of the Mishkan? The place in the Mishkan where the Shechina would dwell. Shehu ha-arin, which is the Ark. K'maisha Amar, as the Pasuk says, V'nirati l'cha Hashem v'dibarti itcha me'ala kapiris. Hashem tells Moshe, I shall meet you there, and I shall speak to you from on top of the kapiris. The kapiris was the covering. upon which the Kerubim sat. Al Kain Hikdim Ha'arein Vakapiras Bekan Kimuktim B'mayla. So what's going to be the first part of the Mishkan discussed in this week's Parsha? The Arin, the Ark. It's the most important thing. V'samach la'arin ha'sholchan v'amenayra, shem kelim kamayu. The next discussions in the Parsha are going to be after the Ark, the table, the menorah, the candelabra, which are vessels like the Ark. V'yayru al'inyan ha'mishkan shebavurim nasu. And then after that, the discussion will be the structure, the walls, the coverings of the Mishkan, which are going to be the place in which these vessels are stored. Okay, so the Ramban is continuing in saying, the Jewish people are now worthy of the Mishkan. The point of the Mishkan is for the Shekhinah Divine Presence to rest amongst the Jewish people. The main part of the Mishkan, where the Shekhinah actually rests, is the Aron, is the Ark. It's the most important. Therefore, in this week's Parsha, it will be the first thing that will be discussed when it comes to building the Mishkan. Following that will be the other vessels, which are the table and the candelabra. Following that will be the structure, which will house all these vessels. That's this week's Parsha. Avol Meisha Hikdim B'Parshas Fayakal Es HaMishkan Es Aloi Ves Mechseyu. But when it comes to Parshas Vayakal, which is a repeat of Parshas Truma, but a repeat in the sense that it's not Hashem commanding Moshe, but rather telling how Moshe actually constructed the Mishkan, there the first thing mentioned is not the most important part of the Mishkan, but rather the structure of the Mishkan, the cover, and the cover above it, and the cover above it. V'chein Asa Betzalel, and this was the order in which Betzalel constructed the Mishkan. L'fi Yeshua Roy L'kadim Amaisa. Because that is what should go first. What should go first is the structure, and then the things that will be stored in the structure are made and brought in afterwards. So now the Ramban is trying to explain to us how come the order in Truma is one way. In this week's Parsha, when Hashem is telling Moshe about the Mishkan, the order is one way. While in Vayakal, that describes actual construction, the order is another way. The answer is, in this week's Parsha, we start with the most important part. That's the Aron, that's the Ark. Following that, we talk about the other things that are similar to it in the sense that they are vessels. And then we talk about the structure, which will be the house for these vessels. That's the order that this week's Parsha follows. Vayakal follows a different order. That order in Vayakal is the order in which the construction was done. And the construction was done in the other order. You have the outer structure first, then you have the utensils, the vessels that will go inside. Okay, so that's the Ramban setup of the Parsha. Then he continues, V'soid HaMishkan. Soid, literally, typically we translate soid as the secret, but here it means the inner essence. What's the essence of the Mishkan? What's the point of the Mishkan? Hu sheyiya ha-kovet asher shochan al har-sinai sheichin olav benister. It should be that the glory of Hashem that rested on Mount Sinai in a revealed form will now continue in the Mishkan in a hidden form. Ukamay Shenemar. And now the Ramban shows different verses that have similarities by which he says this is the basis to say that what we had at Har Sinai was meant to continue in the Mishkan, but again, in a more hidden manner. Ukamay Shenemar Vayishkain Kvayd Hashem al Har Sinai. The Pasuk says the glory of Hashem rested on Har Sinai. Uksiv Heinaranu Hashem Elokeinu. And later on it says that the Jewish people said to Moshe, behold, Hashem our God has shown us as kavoy deves gadlai, his honor, his glory, and his greatness. So you've got the word kavod, honor, resting on Har Sinai. And again, another time where it says Hashem showed us at Har Sinai his honor, his glory, and his greatness. King Kasev Mishkan. And we find similar wording when it comes to the tabernacle. U'chavoy Hashem molayas HaMishkan. What fills the Mishkan? The glory of Hashem. The Hiskar B'Mishkan Shnei Pamim U'Kvayd Hashem Olayas HaMishkan. And in Parshas Pikudei, where the Torah talks about the Divine Presence coming to rest in the Mishkan, it mentions it twice, that the honor Hashem rested in the Mishkan. Keneged Es Kvaydei V'Skodlai. Again, corresponding to that passage that we just mentioned, that the Jewish people said, behold, Hashem has shown us at Har Sinai his glory and his greatness. V'haya B'Mishkan Tamid Im Yisrael HaKavayd Shener Lehem B'Har Sinai. The glory that was seen at Har Sinai remained constantly in the Mishkan with the Jewish people. U'v'va Moshe, and when Moshe would enter the Mishkan, Hayelav hadibar ashenidbar loy bahar Sinai. The dibar, the word of Hashem that came to Moshe, or the voice of Hashem that came to Moshe at Har Sinai, now came to him in the Mishkan. And just as it said, the Torah says regarding the giving of the Torah, from the heaven he made his voice be heard to you to restrain you. And on the land he has shown you his great fire. So this is important to keep in mind. The pasuk says at Matan Torah, Hashem made heard to you his voice, and he showed you his great fire. We've got to keep these two things, these two symbols in our mind. Kach v'mishkan, the same thing is found in the Mishkan. Ksiv v'yishmas hakol midabra elav melach hapiras ben shnei akruvim v'yidabra elav. It says, and he heard, referring to Moshe, heard the voice speak to him from on top of the cover, from in between the two kruvim, the two angelic figures. Vayedaber alav, and it spoke to him. The nichbal vayedaber alav. The reason why it says again, it says Moshe, the voice spoke to Moshe, and it spoke to him. The reason it says it twice, lahagid masha amru bekabbalah, to let us know that which we find bekabbalah in the transmission, which here on the bottom in this commentary it means it's a medrash in Bamidbar. Shakoba min hashamayim. There was a voice that emanated from heaven, me'al ha'kapiras, going on to the top of the cover, umisham medaber imay, and there from that point and from there the voice spoke to Moshe. He called dibur imoshe min hashamayim bayayim. Every time Hashem spoke to Moshe, it was from heaven at daytime. V'nishma ben shnei ha'kruvim, and he heard it coming, emanating out from between the kruvim. Kederech, as we find, u'devarim shamatim etayich ha'esh, and his words you heard from the midst of the fire. V'alkena yushneim zav, and therefore the kruvim were made of gold. So what he's saying here is like this. What he's saying is that what happened, the way that Hashem appeared to the Jewish people at Har Sinai, that was going to continue on a consistent basis in the Mishkan, again in a hidden way. And he shows the correlation. It talks about that at Har Sinai, you heard Hashem's voice. Hashem made his voice heard, he made you hear his voice. And he says, this is alluding to a medrash. Now, this Ramban I have as a commentary, and this is the wording of the medrash that bring down. I am b'midbar rabba yadam alabin beiz. The kol yoyred min hashamayim, a voice descended from heaven, kemin silain shel esh, like a line of fire, lebein shnei ha'kruvim, between, and it would land between the two kruvim, v'shaveas ha'kol midabre lemifnim, and it's from between there that he hears the voice emanating. So basically, there is this idea that there was a voice. This voice came down in a fire, which would then land, which would then come, so to speak, land in between the kruvim. And then when Moshe would hear Hashem speaking to him, where did he hear the voice emanating from? Where was it coming out from? It was coming out from in between the kruvim. You have, at Har Sinai, Hashem made his voice be heard, and you saw, and he showed you his great fire, and actually we have the words in a different pasuk that you heard Hashem's words from amidst the fire, and what correlates to the fire on Har Sinai in the Mishkan is the gold of the Kruvim. Gold is very often, represents fire, either because gold can be reddish. I don't know if it means the gold in the Mishkan was a reddish color, or because it could be reddish. It represents fire, but gold we find in the number of places represents fire. So the golden kruvim from which the words emanate to Moshe represent the fire of Har Sinai from which Hashem's words were heard. So the Ramban tells us that the point of the Mishkan was a continuation of what happened at Har Sinai. Hashem's voice was heard by the Jewish people at Har Sinai from within the fire that was on Har Sinai. Moshe now continued, and the same thing continues with Moshe. There is a voice that comes down from heaven, and it emanates, and Moshe hears it from between the two golden kruvim, that represent the fire of Har Sinai. That is the sod. That is the essence of the Mishkan. The Mishkan is that whatever took place at Har Sinai, the glory of Hashem rested on Har Sinai, it would now, that same glory was now going to rest in the Mishkan on a consistent basis. And just as Hashem spoke to Moshe and spoke to the Jewish people, giving them the Torah at Har Sinai, that process was going to continue in the Mishkan. That process of when Hashem continues to speak to Moshe and giving him more and more mitzvahs is a continuation of the giving of the Torah. And as a continuation of the giving of the Torah, whatever was at Har Sinai has to now also be in the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is a continuation of that process. Okay, now the point you're bringing up right now is a good point. If this is what the Ramban is saying, that it's a continuation of Har Sinai, so I think we have to stop and say to ourselves, okay, but what happens after the 613 mitzvahs are completely now given to Moshe? All the mitzvahs, by the time Moshe passes on, all the mitzvahs have been given. So the process is completed. How now do we understand the continuation of the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash? Does the essence change? Is it the same somehow? And I think the answer is that it is the same. Because even if we say that the actual giving of the mitzvahs of the Torah has been completed, but still, the continuation of how we now acquire the Torah, how much we are able to internalize of the Torah, our greatness in understanding Torah, what Torah does for us as people, what I would call, what is called in many places, the kinyan Torah, the acquisition of Torah. How much does Torah become a part of me? How much knowledge of the Torah do I have? How deep can I go? How much can I apply? How great can I become in Torah? How great can I become as a person in Torah? That continued in the Mishkan. That continued with the Shechina and the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. Because the process started in Har Sinai with the actual giving of the Torah, of the giving of the mitzvahs, and of the giving of the words of the Torah, whether it be the written law, the oral law, the Torah was given. But now how much we will acquire of that, how much of that we will be able to acquire, that continues. That doesn't just come from regular study. That again continues from Hashem giving it to us. Right? Every day we say every day in the Berachas HaTorah, the blessing of the Torah that we say, Hashem is no sein HaTorah. He's the giver of the Torah. Not the one who gave the Torah, he's the giver of the Torah. Hashem, for us to attain true Torah knowledge, it has to start with our effort, but at the end, what we attain is a gift from Hashem. It comes from Hashem. The giving of the Torah always continues. And when we had a Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash and the Shechina was there, the process continued of giving us the Torah, not in the sense of the mitzvahs, not in the sense of the text or the wording, but in the sense of how much of it shall we acquire? How much of it will become part of us? That process continued with that part of the giving of the Torah continued with the divine presence in the Mishkan. Now, without the Torah, once the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, things change. We don't have that same connection. We don't have the Shechina amongst us in the same way that we had on our Sinai in the Beis HaMikdash. We don't have it. We continue to study Torah. We continue to receive Torah from Hashem. But again, when we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we don't have a Shechina in our midst, and we're not as connected to the Shechina, then we don't get the same. Then we don't acquire in Torah what we could before. At the end of Shemona Esrei, after we take three steps back and say Eish Shalom, there's a prayer that we add, right? Yiratzam El Fanecha, Sheyabona Beis Hamikdash from Heira V'Yameinu. We say a prayer. The Beis Hamikdash should be built. V'Sein Chalkeinu B'Seira Secha, and give us our portion in your Torah. What connection is there between the building of the Beis Hamikdash and having our portion of the Torah? What's the connection between the two? The connection is very good. The connection between the two is that the Beis HaMikdash was a continuation of the giving of the Torah. And therefore, when we have the Shechina in our midst, we are able to merit more in the acquisition of Torah. And when we don't have the Shechina in our midst, we're not able to acquire as much. And therefore, every day we daven for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, and we daven, give us our portion in your Torah, because once we have the Shekhinah in our midst, and once we can again be close to the Shekhinah, continuing the process of the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai, that is when we will be able to truly acquire our portion in the Torah. The Ramban's point is that the point of the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, is to have the same glory of Hashem and Har Sinai that was there. It would now continue on a consistent basis amongst the Jewish people, always. Okay. Let's begin. Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Leimar. And Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'yikchu li truma, and they shall take unto me a truma, a separation, a donation. Me'eis kolesh asher yedivenu libay, from every man whose heart motivates him, tikhu es truma si, shall you take my separation. So the commentary of the Sefornu addresses a question that many of the commentaries address, and that is, why does Hashem say to the Jewish people, take for me, take unto me a separation? It should say, give me. That's how, if you want to tell the Jewish people to donate, you say, please, you say, give. Why does it say, take unto me? So the Sefornu says that actually, when Hashem says, speak to the B'nai Yisrael, and they shall take for me a truma, it's actually referring to specific collectors. He calls them gaboyim. There were supposed to be gaboyim in charge of collecting the donations from the Jewish people. The yikhuli truma actually means they shall take, who is the they? That they are the people that are meant to be appointed as the collectors. They take. The Jewish people give, and they collect, and they take. Ka'amrei, now, v'chein asa Moshe b'riditai min ahar. And this is what Moshe did when he came down from Mount Sinai. Ka'amrei, as it says, v'achrechein nikshu kol b'nei Yisrael. Afterwards, all the Jewish people approached. V'yitzavei m'skal shadibra Hashem ite b'har Sinai. And Moshe commanded them, Moshe taught them everything that Hashem spoke to him and Har Sinai, which includes the building of the Mishkan. Va'achar kach, and afterwards, and again this is in Parshas Vayakhel, Va'yomer Moshe kol hadas b'nei Yisrael, Moshe spoke to all the assembly of the Jewish people. Doesn't say he spoke to the Jewish people, but to the assembly of the Jewish people. The assembly of the Jewish people, says Sefornu, is whom? Shehem HaSanhedrin. That's referring to the Sanhedrin. That's referring to the leaders. Kachu me'itchem truma. Take from you truma. Sanhedrin, leaders, take from amongst you, meaning from amongst your nation, a truma, separation. Ubazet zivu lehem sheyigvu. And that's where he was commanding them to collect. So that's what Sefornu says. Anytime it says, take from me a separation, when Hashem says, take from me, instead of saying, give, it means to say that there are supposed to be people appointed as gaboyim, as collectors, to collect the donations. But, says the Sefornu, things did not exactly work out that way. Because in Parshas Vayakhel, we find that when the Jewish people, when at the end of the day, in Parshas Vayakhel, it's very clear that who actually brought the donations to Moshe and to the artisans? The Jewish people themselves. Not the collectors, the Jewish people themselves. Says the Sefornu, the Yisraelim tinu shivu Sanhedrin. The Jewish people didn't wait for the Sanhedrin to collect. Avotek of Yatzim lefnei Moshe. They heard about it. They heard about donating. They immediately left Moshe. They aviu ad b'lidai, and therefore, and they brought until there was no limit. They had to be told to stop. But the change, but at the end of the day, says the Sefornu, was that the Sanhedrin, the leaders, were supposed to collect. The Jewish people didn't bother with that. Jewish people left for Moshe, they brought the materials, and they came straight to Moshe, and they brought it. They're not going to wait for these collectors. They were going straight to Moshe with the donations. Ulefikach, and therefore, says the Sefornu, his explanation to a famous medrash. There's a famous medrash that says that after the Jewish people gave everything, the princes of the tribes were kind of left, not knowing what they're going to, not having anything left to donate. They're expecting to take care of the shortfall. And there was no shortfall. So at the end they gave, specific things. So every time you hear this medrash that the Nesi'im didn't bring, were stuck at the end, they're criticized, right? They should have done it right away. They should have jumped right away. Not wait at the end and say, you know, we'll wait and see the shortfall. They should have done it right away. The Sefrun doesn't learn like that. You know why they were left out to give anything? Because the Jewish people beat them to it. The Nesiim were actually supposed to, from the wording of the Sefrun, it sounds like they were supposed to be from those collectors. And because the Jewish people didn't come to the collectors first, but rather they just went ahead and brought on their own, there was nothing for them to do other than what the Jewish people at the end didn't bring, which were the precious stones and the oil. So he doesn't learn that the Nesiim were tardy. The Nesiim should have been quicker when they were giving. The Nesiim were supposed to be collecting. They weren't supposed to be giving. They were in charge. Their job was to collect, not give. Then the Jewish people beat them to it and gave so much that they really had nothing left to give other than the stones and the oil. But the point of the Sefornu in these words, v'yikhulichum, the Sefornu is answering this question. Why does it say v'yikhul, they should take? To say they should give. The answer is, v'yikhul is not going on the Jewish people. It's got, as a whole. It's going on the people that were supposed to be appointed to collect the materials. And at the end of the day, says the Sefornu, when you look at Parshas Vayakel, you see the Jewish people didn't want to wait for the collectors or bother with the collectors. They brought all the materials needed straight to Moshe. Okay, that's the first part of the Sefornu. The next comment of the Sefornu is on the words, Me'eis kol ish asher yidvenu libay tikhu es trumasi, which means from any person who his heart will motivate him, tikhu es trumasi, you shall take my separation. Says the Sefornu, these words, Me'eis kol ish asher yidvenu libay, from every person that his heart motivates him, tziva shela yigvu bezroya. The command here to Moshe was to tell the collectors, there is no forcing anyone to give. Kinyan shemimashkanim alat tzedakah. Actually, by tzedakah, we find in the Gemara in Halacha that when there was, you know, a city, a Jewish city with tzekanim, with elders, and a bezin, and the power to enforce things, they would force people to give tzedakah. It was expected that people, according to what they could afford, would give charity for the poor, and if they didn't give, there were people whose job were to forcibly collect. It was a tax. Okay? So even though we have this concept of mamashkan al tzedakah, we have this concept that we will force people to give tzedakah, here, when it came to the nation of the Mishkan, nothing by force. Aval yigvu min amasnad min bilvad, the only thing is they would collect from those who donated. It had to basically be completely a donation from the heart. That's what Hashem wanted. A donation from the heart, And nothing more. So the Hamak Dover, the Netziv and Hamak Dover points out, so think about it. If Hashem is saying to the Jewish people, only what they donate shall be collected here for the construction of the Mishkan, what if they decided not to give? Would have been stuck. I mean, they'd have to change the plan afterwards, I don't know. But it seems right now, if the plan is, you know, if the point is now only donations, if there's no donations, you're going to be stuck. Okay. So the Netziv actually asks, why should we say, meaning he doesn't bring down the Sefornu, but he does mention the commentaries that say that the donations for the Mishkan had to be donated. They could not be taken. They could not be forced into it. And then the Netziv asks basically why. Why? The rule is, the halacha is, if you need a shul, right, you can force the people in the community to donate towards the building of, towards the building of the shul. Kol Shekein, he says, when you're talking about, certainly so, when you're talking about a Mishkan, which is a mitzvah saseh, to build a Beis HaMikdash. To build the Mishkan and a Beis HaMikdash is a positive commandment. It's an obligation. And the Hamak Dover brings the wording of the Rambam, that when the Rambam talks about the obligation to build the Beis HaMikdash, he says it's an obligation to build the Beis HaMikdash like the Mikdash in the Midbar, like the sanctuary in the desert. Just as the sanctuary in the desert, Hashem told Moshe, build the Mishkan, so too we have a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash. And you see the other way, that if there's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan is, and it's being compared to the Mishkan, that means the Mishkan was an obligation. It was a mitzvah, as I say, it was a positive commandment to build. So if it's a mitzvah saseh, we know that Bezdin is kaifan ala mitzvahs. We know that Bezdin will enforce the fulfillment of a positive commandment. So why should it be that the Mishkan would not follow the same thing? And therefore the Netziv suggests that actually, and he also learns v'yikhu, they shall take, is going on the gaboyim, it's going on the people appointed to collect, and v'yikhu li truma means, and they shall take for me a separation. They will take it. If somebody doesn't want to give, or somebody doesn't want to give what they should be able to give, and that's part of the job of the collector is to evaluate what each person can give, and if they don't want to give, they're going to take it. If they're going to take it by force. They're going to force the giving, because it's a mitzvah like anything else. Now, at the same time, what does the Netziv do with the rest of the pasuk that says, from every man that his heart motivates him, you shall take my truma? What's that? What does that mean? So Sefornu says that the Hamak Davar says what this means is that, and in case, right, in case there is no problem enforcing, people donate, and people donate whatever they want to donate, you can take that. Because we actually find later on that there was something else that was donated for the Mishkan, and that was a specific amount that everyone had to give. In Parshas Kisisa, right, with the Jewish people are told to give a half a shekel. A half a shekel was given for the creation of the Adonim, of the bases, for the walls of the Mishkan. There it says, Ha'asher lo yarbe. If you could afford more, too bad, you don't give more. This donation is exactly the same for everyone, half a shekel. Here it's being told, does everybody have to give? Yes, everybody has to give. And if somebody doesn't give, are they going to be forced to give? Yes. At the same time, if people are motivated to give as much as they want, because into eight, you can take it. This donation for the construction of the Mishkan doesn't have a limit on it. Doesn't have an exact, doesn't have an equal amount for everyone. Everyone has to give, but everyone can give what the heart desires, as much as they want, and it's not limited. So therefore, that is how the Netziv learns. The Hamak Davar learns, not like the Sefornu, that learns that all the donations here were voluntary. No, they were not voluntary. They were like any other tzedakah, like any other mitzvah that has to be done, that if it's not going to be done, you can force the people to do it. At the same time, when it came to how much they want to give, they can give as much as they want. Give as much as they want. They can give more than what they can afford. They give as much as they want. Unlike a different donation that we know of later, that was in a specific amount, it was an exact, that was the same amount for everyone. Okay. The last comment of the Sefornu that I'm going to share with you, and it's a similar comment in the Hamak Davar, and that is on Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel says, V'zois ha'teruma shatikchu me'itam. And this is the donation. This is the donation that you shall take from them. And then it lists all the different materials, gold, silver, etc. So the question is, what the Sefornu wants to know, what does it mean, V'zois ha'teruma? This is the separation you shall take. Just say, and you shall take from them gold, silver, etc. What is the point of these words? And this is the truma you shall take. Tell them, take these materials. What is these words, v'zayis ha'truma, and this truma you shall take? What's the point of that? The way the Hamak Davar asks the question, he asks, why do we even need a list of all these things? Why do you need a list of all these things? Whenever the actual construction will be discussed, when each item will be discussed, how it's supposed to be made, it says there what it's made from. We know the Aron has to have gold, and we know this has to have this. It's all mentioned when how it's to be formed, when how each thing is supposed to be formed is made, the materials are mentioned. So then what do we need this whole introduction? This is what you give, a whole list of materials. We'll know what the materials are. When we get to the point later on, when it talks about the construction, we'll know what the materials are. Why do we need the list here for? That's the way the Hamak Davar asks. So the answer they both give is like this. The point here in saying this is the truma that you shall give and the list of the materials is to say like this. When you go and ask the Jewish people for donations, right, they cannot pull out their checkbook and say, okay, here's a check, here's money, and now you have the money to go get the materials. Uh-uh. You can't give shove kesef, as it says. You can't give the value of the silver. You got to give the silver. The donations here had to be the actual materials that were used. not a donation of what a donation of something of value, and you'll use that to barter to get the materials. No. The point was they had to be given directly. The Hamak Dover says the same thing, and the Hamak Dover adds that actually, because the donations here were specific to these materials, if you had this rich person, he was mega rich, right? But he doesn't happen to have on him purple wool. Doesn't have purple wool. Okay? Then he's done. He doesn't give purple wool. If for some reason this rich guy, he's loaded with cash, but he doesn't have one of these materials, that's it. He can't do anything. Because the donations have to be these materials themselves. It cannot be just, you know, here's the money, and now I'll give you some money, and now take the money or something and go get the materials. No. The donation had to be the materials themselves, and if you don't have the materials themselves, then there's no donation. Okay. Let's now move on. And turn to page 446. That is Perek Chafei Pasuk Yud. Okay. Vasu Aronite say Shitim. They shall make an ark of Shitim wood. Excuse me, Amasayim Vachetz the Arkai. Its length is 2.5 Amis. Va'amav v'chetzi arkoi, a cubit and a half is its width. Va'amav v'chetzi kamasai, and its height is 1.5 amim. V'tzipisa aysay zahav tar, you shall cover it with pure gold. V'ba'isa mechutz hitzapenu, from inside and outside shall you cover it. V'asislav zerasav sabavim, you shall make a golden crown around it. Rashi tells us that the inside and the outside of the ark being covered with gold really meant that you had this gold box, and inside the gold box was a wooden box. Inside the wooden box was another gold box, and that's what it means. It's called from the inside and the outside. Now, the Arin, we know, is where the Luchas were. And we find in the Gemara that the Arin represents the Torah, and it represents a Talmud Chacham. Just as the Arin holds the Luchas, it holds the Torah, the Talmud Chacham holds the Torah. And therefore, the Ark represents the Talmud Chacham, and the Gemara says the following. Kol Talmud Chacham. She'ein toichai kabare. Any Torah scholar that his inside is not like his outside, ain't a Talmud Chacham, he's not a Talmud Chacham. The same way, it couldn't just be gold on the outside, it had to be gold on the inside. You're not just a Talmud Chacham on the outside, you got to be a Talmud Chacham on the inside. It's not enough just to, on the outside, act like a scholar. You have to be genuine. You have to be sincere. What's going on inside of you has to be in sync with that. Otherwise, you're not a true Talmud Chacham. Now, these words of, or this concept of not being toichai kabare, that your inside, what's going on inside of you, has to, or actually what seems on the outside should really be on the inside, right? That everything is in sync, that you're genuine. So there's a famous Gemara in Brachas, in which the sage Rabban Gamliel made a rule. When Rabbi Gamliel was the head of the yeshiva, he made an announcement, any student that is not toichai kabare, that his outside is not like his inside, which means, on the outside, he's coming across like he wants to study Torah. But if in the inside he's not really that sincere about his Torah study, he's not that real about it, lo yikanes lebeis hamedrash, he does not get entry into the beis hamedrash. In this beis medrash, in this yeshiva Rabbi Gamliel, you want an entrance? You got to be toichai kabare. You got to be. You have to be sincere. You got to be genuine. It's not. We're not going to just go ahead. It's not enough just on the outside to look and to say I want to learn. It's got to be real on the inside. That's what the Gemara says. So the question is, how are you supposed to figure that out? How are you supposed to know? Whoever did the entrance exam in that yeshiva, how is he supposed to know if the student was genuine? How is he supposed to know that on the inside, the student was just like he was trying to prepare on the outside? How do you know that? How do you figure that out?
Persistence. You don't.
Well, okay. You both have different answers. So I'm going to start with your answer first. There's an answer given by one of the previous Gerebis that he said like this. You know, the doors were open. It's not like, you know, there was a guard standing there, you know, and he didn't let anybody in, or the door was locked, and you know, they only opened up the door for you when they figured out if you were sincere. But the way the Ger Rebbe said it was, if Rabbi Gamliel made a statement and he said, the only person who comes into my yeshiva is somebody who's sincere, if you weren't sincere, you didn't go in. You didn't go in. Rabbi Gamliel's words held enough sway that a person, before he would actually go in there, he would look himself over and say, am I for real or not? If I'm not for real, I'm not going. Either because his words held so much weight, or maybe they knew that, you know, there are many stories of great people who could, you know, look at people and then figure them out. And they figured, I'm not walking in here if I'm not for real. He's going to see right through me. That's one answer that's given. But another answer that's given is given, also brought down, this is brought down in a couple of svarim from one of the previous Sadigai Rebbes, and his answer was your answer, persistence, which means the doors were locked. Doors were locked. Can't get in. But if you want to learn, you're going to find a way in. That's what Hillel did, right? When Hillel could not afford to pay to get into the Beis Medrash, right? So what did he do? He climbed up on top of the building to listen through the skylight to hear Shmaya Naftalian teaching Torah. You want to test and see if a person is Teichu Kabara, you want to test and see if a person is for real. The way you see if he's for real is to see, right? If there's something that is obstructing him from learning, and you see that nothing's going to stop this person. Nothing's going to stop him. Nothing will stop him from learning. That's the person who's genuine. That's the person who's sincere. So the entrance exam for Rabbi Gamliel's yeshiva was basically, we're not going to let you in, and then we're going to see now how much you really want to learn. Because if you really want to learn, you will make sure that you can find a way in. So I want to share with you just a beautiful little story that I read. Some of you probably know Rabbi Henoch Plotnick. He's originally from Boston. His mother used to live here. And he's from Chicago. And he wrote an article in Mishpacha magazine. And he told the following story. There was a Rosh Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, Rabbi Yaakov Neyman. He had a yeshiva. And the story goes that a boy came for a faher, it's called, for an entrance exam. He came with his mother. And it was obvious from the beginning that this boy was not your typical yeshiva material. And it came very clear that he wasn't for the yeshiva because he was really far behind in his studies. He didn't know nearly as much as was needed to be able to enter this yeshiva. So Rabbi Neyman, you know, suggested him a different yeshiva. And as soon as he suggested another yeshiva to the boy started crying uncontrollably. Uncontrollably. He finally calmed down. And Rabbi Neyman asked him, why are you crying like that? And the young boy said, it was a miracle that my mother even let me come to be tested to enter yeshiva. I don't know if Hashem is going to do another miracle for me. Then Rabbi Neyman said, you're accepted. When he saw a boy like that who wanted so much to learn, that's the boy that he can bring into his yeshiva. And eventually this young boy became a big Talmud Chacham and one of the teachers in that yeshiva. So if you want to know that somebody really want to learn, it's persistence. They're not going to give up. They're not going to stop until they get what they want.
Can you teach that? Can you teach persistence? Or is it within?
It's within, but it could probably be inspired. You know, sometimes a person has to be pointed out something. Like, you know, sometimes you don't, you know, somebody has to tell you, are you real about this? If you're real about it, then you're not going to stop. And then you're going to say to yourself, hey, that's a good point. So it could be pointed out. I don't know if we taught, but it could be pointed out. Okay. Now, let's give you one last thought on this Gemara. This same Gemara, but Rabban Gamliel. Right? So we know that Rabban Gamliel was replaced, right? After a certain story that took on between him, Rabban Gamliel, and Rabbi Yeshua, they removed him from his position, and the new head of the yeshiva, the new Nasi, became Elazar ben Azariah. The Gemara says, when Elazar ben Azariah became Rosh Yeshiva, he changed the entrance rules, and you don't have, and basically you want to come learn. Whoever wants to come can come into the Beis Medrash and learn. You don't have to be Teicha Kabare. We're not going to go through this whole test of seeing how sincere you are, how real you are. Whoever wants to come, comes. And the Gemara says, on that day, there were 400 benches that were added to the Beis Medrash, and some say 700. Okay? So the question is asked, why are we talking about benches? Talk about students. You know, you have a number already, 400 benches, right? So how about talking about the students? You know, 1,000 more students got in. 2,000 more students got in. What are my benches for? So the answer that I saw is that really the point of the Gemara, when it mentioned the benches, clearly, if there's more benches, it means there's more students. But actually, the Gemara is trying to tell us that as much as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had this opinion, and actually the Gemara Sirman Gamliel actually felt bad when he saw the change in things with the new policy. But the Gemara is trying to show that there was now a change in the yeshiva now that we had an open door policy. Once we let in people that weren't Teicha Kabare, you know, inside, they're not like outside, you know, they're not as sincere as they appear. So now they needed more benches. Because when you're sincere about learning, you're persistent about learning, is there a chair for me? Is there a shtender for me? Is there not a chair? Is there not a shtender? You want to learn? You're going to learn. Whether it's available or not. Doesn't make a difference. But if you're not as sincere or serious about your learning, it's you come into the basement, I need a seat. How am I going to learn? I have nowhere to sit. I have nowhere to be. So the Gemara, by talking about the benches, is actually trying to say that as much as this was the new policy, and perhaps the policy that needed to be, at the same time, the caliber changed. You needed more benches. It wasn't enough anymore that, you know, all I wanted to learn, I don't care about anything else. Now because it wasn't the same caliber, they had other things to, there were other things that made a difference. Now, of course, that idea is an idea for that generation. I'm not telling anybody here that, you know, that they have to be ready to, you know, be in a yeshiva or be in a place where they have no seat and expected to learn the same way if they have a seat. But the lesson of this thought is that, you know, if you really want to study Torah, and the truth is, it's not just Torah when it comes to this kind of idea. If there's anything that you want, right, you got to be ready to give up certain things to do it, right? It's very hard to have both. It's very hard to be able to say, I want to accomplish this, right? But I still want to have these amenities. I still want to have these comforts. You want something, you got to work for it. Especially when it comes to Torah. Especially when it comes to Torah. And therefore, the lesson of that Gemara is, you know, you have to think seriously about what is something that I really need and what is something that I don't really need and how important it is what I want to accomplish, especially when it comes to Torah.